Good evening, everyone. It feels really good to sit with you. To just sit, even though I'm sitting in my own office, I'm still sitting with you. And the same for you, wherever you are, you're still sitting with all of us. And I, during the sitting, I was practicing something that I read in a book, a teaching by a Tibetan teacher, which is very basic. It's just look and rest. So just look at what is and rest there. However, that's very difficult to do because immediately I'm not resting. I'm thinking what I'm looking at. I'm identifying what I'm looking at. I'm express, you know, seeing opinions come up about what I'm looking at. Thinking I shouldn't be looking at that, or all kinds of things come up. So the resting means not that. Just means to be here now with whatever arises. Or even not with, but to be whatever arises. And so this practice is just like endless. Look, rest, look, rest, look, rest. And I started doing this because in the past week, almost immediately, already last Thursday when I spoke, I was addressing the American elections. But not only, I think, I don't remember exactly what I was talking about, but it was about a lot about the American elections and my experience of that. And almost immediately since then, I realized that even though I've been sick, so I've been quite sick since last Thursday too. I'm better today, but I've had some up days and down days. Even in that up and down and being sick and having the American elections and, you know, everything else that's happening in the world and whatever, I feel good. I feel calm. And I realized that part of the reason is that, or maybe all of the reason, is that as soon as that election was over and we got the results, somehow I dropped all expectation. I was no longer attached to a specific result that I wanted to happen. I no longer had an expectation of what should or should not happen. And so the feeling of being overwhelmed or being, you know, overcome or despair or whatever things we could say that we could experience when our expectations are not met, I realized that they were that sense of overwhelmed or overcome or, you know, despairing were linked to the desire for a specific result. And because I no longer had that desire for that specific result, that it all fell away. And so then when I read this thing about this look and rest, I said, well, that's it, actually. Because when I look and rest, then a way of defining who I am, or reaction, the basis for a reaction, crumbles. Because I'm not looking, I'm letting go of looking at something and identifying something and positioning myself in relation to something. And I'm just looking and then resting. So then that defining myself as wanting this or wanting that, or reacting to whatever is arising, being sick, having to cancel the weekend, my trip, whatever arises, it, I feel good. I feel calm. And this look and rest also in that resting arises what we, you know, in our, the Tibetans wouldn't say this, but in our tradition, we call not knowing. So I can really truly experience the not knowing when I just look and rest, when I don't look and identify or look and position. I can really then engage with or just be not knowing. I don't know. And that opens a lot of space, which opens to this calm and to this feeling good. And I'm reminded of when Dogen, he wasn't happy with his practice in Japan, and so he, you know, put his life at risk and made the long journey to China, which at the time in the 13th century was no small affair, and went to China and had to stay on the boat for a while, and then finally was allowed into the country and went to a monastery and found a teacher and had the experience that we have come to call the dropping off of body and mind, because that's what he, how he identified it. And his, this dropping off of body and mind is just the same as looking and resting. Not having a position, not having an identity, not wanting things to be this way or that way, wanting a result, just this. And when he came back, and people said, well, what did you learn or something? And he said, the eyes are horizontal, the nose is vertical. Just this. This is just it. It's not the nose is this way or that way. The nose does this, the nose doesn't do that. It should be better. The nose is running, the nose is congested. The eyes are shaped like this, the eyes are that color. Just eyes. Horizontal, the nose is vertical. which is also a very deep teaching because he's also very present to what is and capable of seeing the difference between eyes and nose, vertical and horizontal, and identifying it as such without becoming attached to it or what that means or anything. So when I say I feel calm or I feel good, I'm fully acknowledging the results of the American election. I'm fully acknowledging the what is happening in the street outside. I'm fully acknowledging having been sick, But there's nothing more than just that. And then I can include everything. So in the, if we take the example of the American election, part of this, the shock of it, I think, for when we're expecting a certain result, is that, we've, in my case, I haven't included all possibilities in my engagement with the subject because for because I have a very fixed idea about what I want and don't want, and I'm surrounded in my personal relations, in my bigger entourage, in the media that I read, whether it's Buddhist publications or general newspapers, or by everyone wanted the same result as me. And so I could easily believe that something, I can easily then be believe something terrible happened, and become devastated and overwhelmed, incomprehensible, right? But if I can see that, if I can just look and rest, then I can open to this huge space of the other half of the population, right? The American population. All of the publications I don't read, all of the podcasts I don't listen to, all of the people I don't know, who I was not including in my system, my place, right? And when I don't include it, then it becomes very small and tight, and I become like devastated, and it's very uncomfortable because I'm not just looking and resting. I'm looking and identifying and positioning and making boxes and circles and things. And I thought of Bernie Glassman, of course, who I often refer to, who said, and here's this quote from him, not about this election, but because he's long since dead, but he said, include as many different people as possible in your mandala of practice, because those you exclude will sabotage you and your work. So, in a sense, what does that mean, sabotage you and your work? Well, it will lead to deception because you've excluded that element, right? You've excluded that realm of possibility. You've excluded those people. You've excluded those points of view. And so, of course, your limited position will be sabotaged, because it's not inclusive, right? And in a sense, and it's Bernie's wife who said this after the election I read, she said, we've been sabotaged. We, all of those who had this view of how things should be, of who should win, and what we thought the world should look, the country should look like. We've been sabotaged. And she's not saying that in like, oh, this is outrageous. It's outrageous because she wasn't including, she hadn't included her mandala of practice to include all these other people, the half of the population who didn't vote like her, right? And of course, there's degree of inclusion. There's degrees of it, and it's not totalitarian in the sense you have to include everyone. It's just about looking and resting, which allows us to then open, to not become fixed. Because when you look, if you look and you truly rest, and then you see that you can't stay there, because as soon as you stay there, you're no longer looking, you're moving, you're fixing to something, and you're missing what's moving. And then that, leads to discomfort. that leads to tightness, that leads to limitations, to feeling not free, to being overwhelmed, discouraged, all of these things that I said. And it's even to the point of, I say this more and more. I used to just say it quietly sometimes to people, but you know, we have this beginner's this practice that we give to people when they start our practice. Although it's not a beginner's practice, it's a practice for everyone of the breathing practice. And we say, and it's not just us, this is a typical Zen teaching, right? Of practice. So we say, you sit and you count your breath. You breathe in, you breathe out, that's one. You breathe in, breathe out, that's two. And you count and you do this until you get to 10. And then you start again. If you get to 10, usually we don't, we get lost, we've think about something else, and then we come back. We don't worry if we were at two or five or eight. We just come back to zero and start again. So I always give people this practice. And I have done this practice. I still do this practice myself. For me, it was very meaningful when I really did it for the first time. Early on, you know, I'd only been practicing a few months when I really did it. And very, very deep experience with it. So I believe in it entirely. However, the more that I do it myself, and the more that I've, you know, matured in my practice, I think, you know, this is kind of a trick. It's not exact that what we're saying to people, because when you breathe in and you breathe out and you say one, you've already drifted. You're already not just breathing. You've already fixed yourself somewhere at one. And then you go on and you do two, and then you're fixed again. So it's kind of an illusion to give people this practice and tell them to go to 10. At the same time, it's extremely valuable. If we just said, go in, go out one, go in, go out one, and we just said, keep saying one, it would be even more fixed. So at least the moving on to the next number keeps us not attached. It helps us to stay in that movement of breath, to not be too fixed. So I keep giving this practice to people because I know the meaning of it, and I know the worth of it. And so I keep doing it. At the same time, as I said, when we look and rest, it's like breathing in and breathing out, and then up, starting again. We look, we rest, we get fixed on something. We look, we rest, we get fixed on something. We look, we rest. Every time we look and rest, we start over again. So if I go back to this example of the American elections, it's really fascinating. You know, someone said to me, oh, you know, I bet you're like totally involved with reading all of this stuff and reading all the news reports and following the news and everything. And I said, well, not really. It's as if all that frenzy that I had before the election, up until the election, it's as if it's like, and now I look and rest. Of course, I look because I'm, you know, an addict, I'm a news junkie. So I have developed, you know, a possibility to function with this addiction that I have. But so I look and I rest. Oh, is that so? You know, which apparently is what my Mizumi Roshi used to say to people when they would come to him and tell them all their stories and difficulties they were having and the dramas of their life and everything. And he would just say, oh, is that so? And then they would say something else, and you'd say, oh, is that so? Totally heard it, entirely present, looking, listening, And then resting. Oh, is that so? And then something else. Oh, is that so? Acknowledging and then resting and then again, looking and resting, looking and resting. And I found myself doing this with news, what I read on the internet, with the news. And I'm surprised actually. I'm surprised also that I've been able to let go of, so like I said, because I was sick, I couldn't go to Adrien's day of practice that he organized, and I had to give the Dharma talk online, and I really just let go. Just, oh, is that so? And look and rest. Look and rest. There's nothing else to do, actually. The best thing that I can do is that. And that, as Bernie says, we get overwhelmed because we have a fixed idea. I mean, I'm saying this. And the more that we include in our mandala, then the less sabotage there will be, the less deception there will be. Because when we expand our mandala, when we expand our what we think of as mine, we include all of the different parts, all of the different flashes of light that are, remember, I think once in the study group or something, we had this thing about something like the Jewish tradition where, or no, maybe it was an African story where the god of the universe or something became upset and broke the light source or something, and it broke into, millions of fragments, and each of us is one of those fragments. And so if we work together, then we can restore the light and make whole. There's something related to the Jewish tradition too. I'm not sure what it is, but about this making whole by including all the fragments. So the more that we expand our mandala, the more we open when we just look and rest, then there's peace. That's how we make peace. We make peace within ourselves, but we also make peace with others. We see the difference. We see the eyes are horizontal and the nose is vertical. We see this person voted for Trump and this person didn't. We see, I see that the street is outside and my office is inside. And yet, it's not really inside and outside. It's just different forms, different manifestations of the same light. And as we know from Leonard Cohen, because of the cracks, the light gets in. So this moment of well, say this moment of this American election is a big crack in my way of being, right? Of seeing, in my belief system. It's a big crack. But that allows light to get in. That allows me to open. That allows me to rest. That allows me to look and rest. With instead of look and grasp, look and push away, look and fix, look and position, Look and rest is really restful because it's not fixing in a place or a time or a position. So, At the retreat in Portugal, I talked about this dropping off of body and mind, and I noticed that the text for the Dharma for the study group last week was from Dogen's Shobo Genzo, in which that comes up as well. Or was it from the week before? No, I think it was for last week. Yeah, last week. Those of you who were there, I wasn't out there. And that's pure coincidence. And yet it's probably not, because that is such a central part of our practice. When I talked about it at the in the Portugal retreat, it was coming in the context of this teacher who had said something about, don't get upset about your meditation. They say, don't say that your meditation will be better next time, or I'm going to do it better next time or next week or something. The teacher was saying, do it now. Because anyway, you're only doing it for about 45 seconds. In any case, right? So that's where I got this 45 seconds of grace that we talked about in the workshop, in the weekend in Portugal. And he said, it's easy, you can do it anywhere. You only need to sit straight. Sit straight, which, that's a big program, actually, sitting straight. Because what does that mean, sitting straight? If you think about sitting straight, well, you're not sitting straight. If you think about dropping off body and mind, you're not dropping off body and mind. If you think about looking and resting, you're not looking and resting. So that's why he says you only do it for about 45 seconds total in your meditation period. And probably each time it happens, it lasts about 5 seconds, right? So he's saying, don't worry. Don't talk about it being bad this time and you'll do it better next time. Do it now. Just sit straight. Look and rest. Look and rest. And it's endless, like I said, this look and rest. But you can do it at any moment. Doesn't mean only on your cushion. Like I said, I did this for the half an hour before the Dharma talk, but you can do it anywhere, anytime. I found myself doing it after the presidential election, the American election. I didn't have the term, I wasn't using that terminology of look and rest, but that's what it was happening. I was just looking and then resting, not becoming attached to what was arising, partly because my expectations had been so high, right? Not that I was convinced that Kamala Harris was going to win, but my expectations of not having Trump win were so high, of not wanting Trump to win were so high, that, the fall was great. And so I think that in that free fall, because when you're like, in that really high up position of not wanting something, and that's what happens, well, then whew, it's like this fall into the emptiness. And I think that probably, I really don't know. What happened to me was that I just found myself looking and resting. I had no ground on which to stand anymore. Just looking and resting, looking and resting. And I, yeah, when I was looking for the quote from Bernie Glassman about, Include as many people as possible in your mandala of practice. And the mandala of practice is just your practice, which is your life. So include as many people as possible in your life. It doesn't mean you have to be friends with them all. It just means include their existence, include their presence. In order to include, you have to drop your ideas about them and yourself. And so when I was looking for this quote, I came across this text of quotes from Confucius that I had. I don't even know where I got this, but or why I had it, but and there was this exchange that Confucius had with one of his students. So Confucius says, "I would love to just say nothing." And I know this really well, that for, often I feel that way. In the beginning of my practice, I mean, when my teacher was asking me to start saying things, I didn't want to. I just wanted to say nothing. For one thing, I thought there was nothing to say, so why even bother, but the student says, "But if you say nothing, how would we disciples hand down your teachings?" Good question, right? And Confucius says, "What has heaven ever said?" So in the Confucian Chinese universe, there's heaven, human, and earth, or those three principles, something like that. And heaven is like the absolute. We could think of that in our terms of the absolute, right? Or Mu, or Buddha nature, or any of these words that we use to, which we can't really put a word on, but we have to put some word on it. So the Chinese Confucians called it heaven. So Confucius says, "Well, what did heaven ever say?" And he continues, "The four seasons keep turning, and the hundred things keep emerging." In our Zen tradition, we say, "And the 10,000 things keep emerging." But what has heaven ever said? So this is a way of looking and resting, not having anything said about it, not having any explanation or definition, any thought about it. It's just what it is. So honoring it by just this looking and resting, looking and resting. In order to do that, the 10,000 things, that's everything, right? So that's including the 10,000 things in your mandala of practice. The four seasons keep turning. Donald Trump is elected. He does all kinds of outrageous things. People starve in Gaza. Leaves are falling. Each leaf that is falling is a blossoming of autumn. We think of it as, this dead thing that's happening, but it's really the burgeoning, the blossoming of autumn, of this season, this force, this season that is upon us. However, if we, can't look and rest with it, then we struggle and we suffer and we become depressed and overwhelmed. And we don't, we limit ourselves and our mandala and our practice and our life and the others. We put everyone in boxes, let's say. And then we're really tight and closed off. And eventually we don't even know that those people exist, right? I don't even know that these Trump voters exist. Of course, I hear about it and of course, somebody's voting for him. But that's not in my realm of practice. That's not in my mandala. But when I open the mandala to include that, then it's completely different. Completely different. We have different opinions, different views of how things, how we, different expectations, but we're one. We're all part of the same Mandela of practice. And that's where we can, from that place of looking and resting, include opening our mandala to include, include, and include. This is where we know, we just know it. What's the appropriate response? We're not engaging in positions, beliefs, separations. We're engaging in oneness. And then we know how to respond. So tonight, looking and resting for a half an hour, then I just knew what to say. I didn't have to say, I would love to just say nothing. Because I know that I would love to just say nothing, like Confucius. I would love that. But I actually wouldn't love that because I know that that's not the appropriate response in this context. Often, when I log on for these meetings, or sometimes, that's my intention, is I'm not going to say anything. But I never do that. Because I look and rest, and I then, from that place of looking and resting, place of oneness, instead of seeing myself as different from this or outside of this or not including all of this, then I can just speak. I can just say something. In this not wanting to just say anything, to say nothing, in this wanting to say just nothing, there's an idea about what should be said and not said. There's an idea of a result, even if it's really subtle. I want to say something important. I want to say something clear. I want to say something interesting. I want to say something different. All kinds of things that I'm not even aware of usually. But I know I've learned that that's what it is. There's an expectation there. And when I just look and rest, then expectation falls away. And I feel good. And I feel calm. It sounds like James Brown, I feel good. It's true. And James Brown can sing like that because he's completely one with what he's saying. James Brown, man, when he sings that, whew, you feel it. I don't know if everyone knows the song I'm talking about, but it's all about being one. So I guess I will stop and just say nothing for a moment and let you share and participate with your words if you would like to ask questions or add something or comment. It also means I can blow my nose, so.
Just to underline what you just said, I played I Feel Good every day for over a semester in Troisième because it was part of some project we were working on. And every single time it was fresh. Every single time it made you feel good. And then I was in, the inspector came while it was on, and I got a super inspection mainly because she felt good. Yeah, he was really there when he was doing that.
Great. Wow. Krisha.
Good evening, everyone. Do you listen? I have my problems, I tech problems usually. Thank you, I'm Mihoshi, for your talk. I wanted to share. I think I'm how it resonates for me when you were talking about the beginner's trick or teachment about anchoring your focus in counting. I still use it a lot. I remember the first time I was with you, I think it was 2015, and you gave me that instruction. And this week I had an experience about anxiety. Sometimes I have anxiety, sometimes I have to for me to meditate, to use the counting. But it was the kind of anxiety that it's pointing for something that I don't know how to be with, so I go out and usually I get overwhelmed, or it's a big sadness, and I think it's pre-depression anxiety. Don't know. And I thought, shit, I'm with this again. I'm going in a place I don't like. How am I going to meditate? Is this going to be me counting and not? Nah. And I'm always thinking about love, 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 love. But then sometimes it's not very easy to love everything. I don't know. Or this can be tricky, this word. But I say, okay, I'm with all this, so just try it. Just go there and try it. And I was really focused in the counting, noticing my anxiety also. And I did it. I was alone. It was in the morning. It was almost 20 minutes, I think. And I don't know if that happened, but it looked like something shifted. I just was like, you see, you did it. So good. Nothing happened. You seated with your anxiety, you're noticing it, but you are still counting, and it's okay. And after it, I felt really glad, really happy. Don't know. And you were talking now, and I didn't know what she mean with the Mandela. And I thought, oh, this must be Nelson Mandela. You know, putting in, I don't know, my English is not good enough, but putting in all his enemies to fight apartheid and all his life. And he didn't, his way was not about revenge or whatever. He really took a lot. He really took in all his enemies and whatever he to make his life. And then finally you explained a bit what is the Mandela. I really don't understand if it's Mandela like Nelson Mandela or Mandala, but I got it. It feels like the same thing that I was thinking. And about this thing we are living. I don't know, but I guess I hope Americans and the whole world can integrate Trump administration in this whole balance that we know that America are very important. And that was this. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have explained what the word mandala is. It's the Tibetan term. You know, they have these forms, a circle that includes various aspects, and they different energies. There's like the five Buddha families, which are the different colors and the energies and the archetypes and whatever. And so it's a shape, it's a form that's an image that is reflects our who we are or our community, or that's why I said it's your practice. So it's your life. It's used as a metaphor for your life, for your practice. But Nelson Mandela is a good example of someone who expanded the mandala of his being and his life to include more and more and more, because he knew if he didn't, they would sabotage his practice, his life. And he was able to, accomplish amazing things. Because he included and kept including and including and including. Even things that you would never, there's the famous film about he included the rugby team, which that was like the ultimate white sport. Black people did not play that sport. And but he saw how important that was to them. And if he wanted them, the nation, to be one, if they wanted them to be one people, then everyone should celebrate it. What's important for those, that part of the mandala. And he included them. And that helped his mandala to not be sabotaged. So that's a really good example. And your example too of coming back to the breath, that's the equivalent of looking and resting. And then you see the calm that comes from that, and the ease that, and the relaxation. And maybe it's not total relaxation, but your anxiety is eased by it. Good examples.
Thank you.
Claudia.
Hello, hello, Amy. Hello, everybody. I'm happy to see you. That I don't know if you feel good, but it looks like you feel. I mean, you look better. You feel better than last week. Just to share. I don't know, when you were talking, it was a. I had an experience yesterday, and it was surprising me so much that it really made me think. You just said, because I was invited. I've never been there before, but I was invited to participate to a, how do you say, a folk ball, a ball,
A ball, a
a
dance,
ball, a dance. And but I used to go to dance with. I don't know, until now, when I was going to dance, I was going to dance with a partner. So it was like I knew I was going to dance with that partner. And but at this ball, so it's like a traditional ball, like a folk ball. I don't know, everybody's talking about that. So you all dance together, and you change, you keep on changing the partner. So you can dance with a woman, you can dance with a man, you can, but you don't choose it, because the dance is going to choose for you the partner. And it's great, because when it began, I was like so surprised, because it's like the people, we were like maybe 70, but it was like from 20 years old to 70, I mean maybe 80 years old, I don't know. And it was so and the dance make you change. And at the beginning, I was like, oh no, I'm not going to be with that man. No, please. Because of the dance. And as a matter of fact, after like maybe, I don't know, maybe it lasts maybe 5 minutes, I was really thinking like that. Oh no, I'm not going to dance with that person, or and after 15 minutes you just forget all about that, because it's I mean, all my expectations were so wrong, you know, because the guy I didn't want it to dance with him was maybe the best dancer, and after it was a woman, and she had such a way to do that, so interesting. And so maybe I think at the end of the night, I danced with the 70 people for sure. So each of them, you know, and each person was so, I don't know. I mean, it was so surprising, because normally I'm like very attached to whom I would like to dance with. And at the end of the night, of course, it was so great to have touched everybody, to have danced with each one of the person who were there. Ah, it was very surprising for me. It was really new. I was like, it was like a huge openness for me. You know, okay. So I was maybe it was related with what you said just before. It was like a real, very, very interesting experience.
Thank you. Another good example of, you know, opening the mandala and seeing what happens when we, you know, can drop the ideas. In that situation, it was the activity itself, the ritual made it so that you couldn't choose. I mean, you could, I suppose, you could say, I'm not going to do that dance. But then you weren't there, then that's not what you came for. You came to dance, and so you know. Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. And you see how wonderful it was.
But you know what was very interesting is that during the dance, everybody changed, and this is you have to stop on the seventh person. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and the seventh person will be your partner for a while. You know, so it's really like it's like a game, you know, you don't know who you're going to be with. So it's so interesting.
Yeah, wonderful. Beautiful. Was this like French folklore dancing, or was this some other?
It was French. Most of it was Irish, I think, yesterday. You know, I'm not. It was really new for me. But it was a lot of polka. So I guess polka is from Hungary. It's like from it's.
Yeah.
Polka.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly, but it was kind of European dances.
Yeah. Beautiful. And we see, you know, what happens when our identity and the identity of the others crumbles. And then our heart opens, and our, you know, there's joy and there's happiness.
And you know, because, you know, maybe for the others it's you, but at one point the seventh person was Daniel. I haven't seen him, you know, Daniel from Dana.
Ah, Daniel Miles.
It was the joke of the night. It was very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I once had a retreat with Bernie Glassman. At the end, it was a weekend workshop, and at the end, it was a big room with, you know, 100 people. And before we would move on to dinner, he said, so before you go out of the room to go to dinner, go to the person as far across the room from you as possible and greet them, the person who is the farthest away. So look around the room and see the farthest opposite corner. But on the way to getting there, you greet each person that you meet before you get, in order to get to the opposite corner. Well, you know, I don't think anyone actually made it to the opposite corner. And again, it was the kind of thing where you couldn't decide who was there in your path, you know? You just started going through the crowd and kept coming onto someone else and then someone else and someone else and ended up greeting the person who had greeted the person before you. And that person really wasn't in your path to start with, but then you had to greet them because they were there, and similar kind of thing, like the dance of greeting, including opening. And, you know, that's what it is to make whole. So it looks like we're out of time. So that when we look and rest, that's what arises, the time. So we will stop there. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm looking for